presents Babblewick Hall by Scott Cherry, starring Nicholas Le Prevost and Forbes Masson.
Augustus, hey, why are you late?
Squire.
Early to see you, I've started to dress. I appear to be having a problem with my silk coat.
That's because it's back to front.
Oh.
How many times have I told you, sir, you must never try and dress yourself? It doesn't become a man of your breeding to touch his own buttons.
Now, if you raise your arms.
Now, as soon as I've had breakfast, you'll tell Jack to saddle up Hercules. I'm riding into the village to see the Guinnesses.
Mm-hmm. Sit yourself down and I'll pull on your boots.
They run the village of charges.
And leg up.
Doing wonderful work. Teaching the children of the needy. And it's my intention to give them 5 guineas so that they can provide those poor children with a little veal broth.
Augustus. I can't. Get your boots on, Squire. I just can't.
Why never not?
I haven't the strength. I haven't had a proper meal in weeks. And here you are, talking of giving 5 guineas to the children of the needy, when you haven't even the money to buy a tuppenny loaf for your own 7.
We're starving. Jack, Molly, Barney, all of us.
Do you know what we had for our supper last night? Bone soup.
Oh, dear.
We're starving to death. And all because you're giving your money away to noble causes, like the local charity school and the National Society for the Relief of Decayed Housekeepers.
Augustus, I haven't given all my money away, and I can assure you we are not going to starve.
Squire, the louder's that beer, the mice have started to riot.
The thing is, Squire, if I'm supposed to be groom of Babblewick, where's me wage?
Well, Jack,
I'm supposed to get 5 guineas a year, and I've barely had 5 shillings.
I've only had 3 pence since Christmas.
The thing is, Augustus...
And how am I supposed to cook for you, sir?
My dear Molly...
It was a time when every day was roast beef with potatoes, a poached salmon with fennel sauce, and a mumbled rabbit smothered in onions with boiled tench, venison pasties, and dishes of collard beef. Now, Wilkie, if we get to nibble a few scraps of cow heel...
I do accept that my management of the Babblewick estate has been somewhat loose.
Loose? As soon as you get the rent from the farmers, you throw it away like a tree.
Now, that is not true.
Read your list, Mr. Sly.
In October, you send 2 guineas to the Free Association of Penitent Prostitutes.
Only 2?
You then donated £4 to the National Trust Society,
which offers great comfort to the Irish labourer.
And you awarded no less than 5 guineas to a local philanthropic organisation,
which hopes to provide all unemployed Northerners with knitted gloves.
The list goes on. A shilling's an ed for a new bucket, 6 and 8 to Widow Nash to have her children inoculated against the smallpox.
6 and 8 to Widow Nash, and I'm standing here in nail boots full of holes.
Oh, Squire, you can't keep giving money away like this.
My dear, dear devoted servant, I appreciate your concern. Of course I do. But don't you realise that if I'm to become this century's greatest benefactor, if I'm to go down in history as humanity's greatest friend, then I have to give my money away.
But you can't let your domestic starve.
We need belly timber, Squire. Goat's father. His stomach's that empty, he thinks, with roast meat cooked.
Which is why I bought this.
A piece of paper?
We can't eat paper. As you know, I went to Squire Blunt's to repay some of the money he lent us for repairing the roof.
But you only have 5 shillings.
I know. And feeling as hungry as a crow in June, I'm afraid I spent it at Dribb's Ale House.
Oh, no.
On a plate of the most delicious buttered eggs and bream. And after I'd eaten that magnificent dinner, I sat back in my seat near to the innkeeper's parrot to contemplate the ceaseless bustle and hurry of the tradesmen and farm labourers.
Is this a long story, Squire?
And it was just then, just as Squire Noble came in asking if anyone wanted to pay a shilling to watch the local lunatics try to shear his sheep.
It's the greatest entertainment you'll ever see.
And it was just as the parrot started quoting Milton,
"I'm blind, I'm blind,"
that I noticed him. A one-armed, one-legged figure who, as it turned out, had sailed with Ogle's West India squadron and had been hit by a cannonball during the assault on Cartagena.
How do you know he sailed with Ogle's West India squadron and had been hit by a cannonball during the assault on Cartagena, Squire?
Don't ask. Because he hopped over to my table and in words reeking of pigtail tobacco and cheap rum said...
Please, sir, take pity on one who sailed with Ogle's West India squadron and was hit by a 20-pound cannonball during the assault on Cartagena.
And then he muttered...
If you buy just one of these tickets for 2 shillings, sir...
What?
I guarantee the entire proceeds will find their way into the Royal Navy's Lemon Fund. And as I'm sure you know, sir, there's nothing better for curing the scurvy than a good lemon.
And I ask you, any of you, how could I refuse?
Don't say you gave him 2 shillings.
No. I gave him half a crown.
What?
And in return... He gave me this.
You mean you bought a lottery ticket?
Yes.
Oh, wow. You bought a lottery ticket with the money raised from pawning my silver waistcoat.
But, Augustus, we stand to win 1,000 guineas. Just think what we could eat for 1,000 guineas.
Where's Jack with the newspaper?
He's that drunk. He's probably fallen from his horse.
Squire?
Oh, Molly, have you seen Jack?
Yes, sir. He's just jumped Wimsey's brook.
Oh, good.
And fallen off.
What did I tell you?
But I could just about see he was holding a newspaper.
Oh, a newspaper with the winning lottery numbers. The numbers are on this ticket. 1, 2, 7, 5, 0.
Here I am, sir.
Ah. Now you'll see your Augustus.
I'm sorry, Squire. The paper got so crumpled when I fell off the
wall. Just give it to me. Now, let me see. Lottery results, page 7. Augustus, you read it. What? I'm too excited.
Oh, very well.
It says here that people queue for miles in Leeds to look at a new fruit called pineapple. Just read the numbers, Augustus.
Oh! Oh, no! Oh, dear!
What?
Oh! What?
It had more mackerel rice, not it?
Just read the numbers!
Oh! Winning lottery numbers...
Yes, for this month's draw...
Yes, are...
Good God!
What?
Does it say 1, 2, 7, 5, 0? What does it...
Yes!
You may have won 1,000 guineas...
Oh, Squire!
Give me the paper! Give me 1,000 guineas! He's right! These are my numbers! These are my numbers! I won!
Oh! Mr. Snipes fainted.
Oh!
So has Molly.
Jack!
Oh! I've won 1,000 guineas. I'll be able to pay off all my debts, pay my servants their wages, and then... And then I'll be able to agitate for radical reforms. And I'll start by making 3 demands for the common people. Circulating libraries, the minimum wage, and pavements. And I'll be hailed as the greatest provider, the one true friend of the friendless. St. Fenton, patron saint of the poor.
Hold the horse steady, Augustus. I need to dismount.
I am a little
squire. Steady, Hercules.
Oh, Mr. Bagglewick, you come.
Welcome to our humble little charity school, Mr. Bagglewick.
Yes. Oh, so honored.
The honor's all mine, ladies, I can assure you.
Is it true, Mr. Bagglewick, that you just won a fortune in the lottery?
Yes, Miss Guinea, it is.
Oh, yes.
And my intention is to make this school the first beneficiary.
Oh.
Isn't that right, Augustus?
I believe so, Squire.
Now, whatever your poor, unfortunate pupils require, I will provide. Books, slates, clothes, anything.
Such a modern effect.
Well, I have to say, Miss Kitty, that even I am overcome by my generosity.
May the blessings of God shower down on you, Mr. May
he who sees all things reward you for your great kindness in helping the abandoned children of this parish.
Oh, ladies, please, the last thing I desire is thanks for... recognition of any kind.
Oh, I'm sure.
Augustus, will you kindly lead Hercules to water?
Yes.
If you'll just come this way, Mr. Babington, we thought we wanted to give you a grand tour of our school before offering you some green tea and raspberry cake.
Raspberry cake? Yes. Oh, splendid. Yes. After you then, ladies, please.
Oh, such a handsome-looking gentleman.
Stop scowling, Augustus. Oh, no, ladies. I don't want any thanks or recognition. Accept the good angle of history as the century's greatest benefactor.
Well, it's true, isn't it? Squire, on bended knee, I beseech you. Don't give them your lottery money. Please.
Mr. Babblewick, is where we keep all the orphan boys a-sewing.
And how many boys do you have in this room?
Over 40. And all came to us in a state of such wretchedness, Mr. Babblewick.
Really?
They were so sickly yellow and famine-ridden, weren't they?
Oh, crawling with life.
Yes. And covered in sores.
Stricken by Rick. We didn't know whether to give them food or physic, did we, Helen?
No, no.
Then how wonderful that they should find themselves here in your charity
yes.
school.
Yes.
Safe from the harsh world, exploitation and slavery.
Yes.
How long do you keep them sewing?
From 5 in the morning till 9 at night.
You mean work them for 16 hours a day?
We do.
Without rest?
Oh, no, no, Mr. Babblewick. We let them rest.
Ah.
5 minutes. And, of course, we let them sleep during the night. And they're only 8 to a bed.
And it's 12 to a bed at that charity school in Wakefield, isn't it, Anne?
When do you teach them to read?
What?
When do you teach them to read?
Oh. Mr. Babblewick, did you ask... When do we teach them to read?
I did.
Oh, Miss Babylon, we can't have the neighboring classes learning to read.
Talk about sewing dragon's teeth.
I mean, how could we teach subordination and pauperism to children that can read?
Our sole task, Squire, is to preserve these orphans from vagrants.
Yes, and to get them used to a life of labor and early rising.
What happened to that boy over there?
Oh, we've tied him to a table leg for smiling.
But that's torture.
Well, how else can we deliver his soul from hell, Squire?
In heaven's name! You should be ennobling his spirit, showing him the miracle and wonder of his youth, protecting his frail mortality from life's cruelty, not tying him to table legs for smiling.
Oh.
He should be running wild and innocent through fields and forests, looking for fairy rings and hunting for pooty shells.
What?
Sucking on sugar plums and playing barley breaks, not incarcerated in some vile prison of industry. How dare you treat these defenseless children in this way? You're no better than tyrants. Loathsome, cruel, bloodthirsty tyrants.
Oh. Does this mean you won't be joining us for tea and raspberry cake, Squire?
Augustus.
Leaving already, sir.
Augustus, this isn't a charity school. It's a house of correction. You should have heard me.
The whole of Yorkshire heard you, Squire.
I've got to save those poor children, Augustus. They'd be better off being kidnapped for the plantations than stay here.
So, how much money did you give them?
Nothing.
Oh, sir. And here was I thinking you'd give them 1,000 guineas.
Here they come, quick. Help me to the saddle. Help me.
Give the best, Squire.
Oh, hold him, Dave.
Squire, please don't leave us like this.
I'm sorry, ladies. But I must.
Is there anything we can do to make amends, Mr. Babblewick?
Anything at all.
If it makes you any happier, we'll start the children at 6 instead of 5.
Yes, and we'll do away with the thumb school.
Ladies.
And providing we can keep the rat.
The only way you can atone for your cruelties, ladies, is by agreeing to sell me the entire school.
What?
Squire. Name your price.
Oh, no.
I'll pay anything to save those poor children.
Sir, please. Ladies, ignore them. I beseech you.
Oh, it is a shame you didn't come to us earlier, Mr. Babblewick.
What?
We've already had an offer. From Squire Blunt.
Squire Blunt.
Hello, Molly.
Jack, what are you wearing?
What do you think I'm wearing, you great jingle brain? It's a coat that's formally new.
Oh!
And what's more, it's got nearly all its buttons loose.
How did you get that?
The Squire's already given me some of my wages. And what's more, I've just been to see Richard Dodd, and I'm getting my new boots on Monday.
What's that smell?
I've got a bottle of lavender water for Anna Norton, Luke.
Ah, oh, that's nice of you, Jack.
And once I've got the rest of my wages off the Squire, I'm going to take her to Harrogate. Oh, Molly, I'm that cheery, I feel like giving a poor man tuppence. What's for dinner then, Molly?
The Squire wants to celebrate winning the lottery, so he sent out for a saddle of mutton.
Oh.
And two pigeon pies.
Ooh, that's plenty.
As well as four dishes of chicken, a round of beef, some Oxford sausages, a stuffed pike, seven silver salvers of whips and jellies, some almond cakes, stams and wine, a hogshead of port, a pail of cider and a quarter barrel of ale.
But no fritters?
No, Jack. There'll be no fritters. Molly, you'll have to send the lot back.
Mr. Snipe?
I've just left the Squire drawing up a contract of sale with the Giddy Sisters.
Eh?
The sisters have received an offer from Squire Blunt for the charity school, and our master is prepared to beat it.
Oh, no.
What's he offered them?
1,000 guineas.
What?
He's done what? You mean he's given them everything? I'm going to kill him.
Don't be ridiculous, Jack. Stay right where you are.
I want to kill him.
You do no such thing.
The man's a complete villain. A blood-brain, chinny-faced, nippy-nappy, snaps, gulp.
Oh.
And in a ringing, skinny-eyed, sullen, figured toodle the boot.
How dare you heap such insults on a man that was educated at Eton and Oxford?
Jack.
I'm sorry, Mr. Snipe.
No matter what you think of the Squire, Jack, you must never, ever forget that your father dug ditches. Mm. Just as I must remember that my mother was a swiller of slops.
My mother sold worms. Don't cry, Jack, please.
So, the Squire's to give away his new fortune. Oh, well. I'll away and tell Anna that we won't be taking her to Africa. And then I'll tell Richard Dodd that I won't be buying his new boots.
Oh, don't you start crying as well, Mr. Snipe.
I better go and put my silver waistcoat back in the pond.
Then I'd better go and cancel the pigeon pies and the chicken and the round of beef. And the stuffed pike, and the Oxford sausages, and the seven silver salvers and whips and jam.
Are you telling me, Mr. Babblewick, that you persuaded the Giddy Sisters to sell you their charity school?
I am.
How dare you all leap me in this way, sir? How dare you?
Mr. Blunt,
I bought two spinning jennies and a starching frame. I was going to use those children to work them.
Which is why I bought the school.
What?
And I intend using that school to teach the illiterate of this parish, men, women, and children, to read.
Did you say you want to teach the poor
to read? Even those you enslave in this cotton mill.
You wish to rob me of my work?
The sooner our nation's poor are educated, the sooner they'll see how they must shun the growing evils of industry and manufacture.
What?
To quote the great Jean-Jacques Rousseau, and I translate, man is born free, but everywhere he is in chairs.
Mr. Babblewick, educate the labouring classes, and you'll expose society to all manner of riot and turbulence.
I disagree.
You disagree?
I do.
I've been nothing but a good neighbour to you, Mr. Babblewick. When I heard you didn't have any money to mend your roof, I thought the poor fellow's got woodpeckers in his thatch. I'll help him out.
And it was exceedingly kind of you.
And when I heard you were coming today, I was all for welcoming you with a glass of Bristol milk and a biscuit.
Really?
But for you to come here and start clacking on about getting my workers to go to school.
Why are you laughing?
I pay them sixpence a day to work these looms. Do you really think they'd give that up in order to learn to read?
I do.
All right. You can ask them.
What?
We'll gather all my workers in the field by Whimsy's Brook, and you can ask them.
Well,
Our mill workers
been waiting for you, Squire.
Thank you, Jack.
What exactly are you going to say to them, sir?
I have no idea.
Come on, Mr. Babelwick. The mob awaits.
Well, there's hundreds of them. Help me.
You can deliver your speech from this tea chest, Mr. Babelwick. Right, hush up the lot of you. Mr. Babelwick is about to inspire you with the brilliance of his ideas.
Come on, Squire, I'll help you.
Very well.
I speak to you today as one of our country's leading benefactors. As one who has campaigned ceaselessly for the rights of the dispossessed. And as one who spent 3 busy, frantic years seeking to provide the unemployed of Barnet with free soap. And I also speak to you today as one who, on bended knee, implores you all to quit your jobs in Mr. Blunt's cotton mill before the 16-hour working day breaks your spirit. Before the fatigues and hardships of such a life turn you all into lame, enfeebled, decrepit, asthmatic, consumptive wretches, panting for breath and crawling half alive upon the surface of the earth. There is a blight on this once great nation, and it goes by many names.
Not so loud, sir.
Some call it industrial revolution. Others hail it as a glorious manufacturing harvest. But I see it as nothing less than a pestilence which is driving our healthy ploughboys from the fields and turning them into the sad-faced slaves of factory and mill.
Could just get on with it, Squire.
I ask you to quit Mr. Blunt's mill and join me in my charity school, where you can work to escape these twin evils of ignorance and slavery by learning to read.
Did you say we should learn to read, Squire?
I did.
Oh, you can't teach us to read, no, Squire. No, no.
Why am I not?
Because we're the rubble.
We're the meanest lot.
Common people.
Well said, Harry.
My father never read a word. And what's good enough for my father is good enough for me.
Aye.
Besides, where's the money in being able to read?
Where's the money? Where's the money? Is that all that's important to you?
Well, how else can we get drunk?
Drunk? No, don't go. No, I ask you. Oh, just to stop. Please. This could be the most important choice you'll ever be asked to make. Your lives would be changed. Nay, your very fates transformed by being able to decipher the written word.
How?
What?
How will our lives be transformed by being able to read?
How will your lives be transformed by being able to read? Well, it's obvious.
No, it isn't.
Well, it would be if you were educated.
Augustus, sir, how would their lives be transformed? If they'd be able to read alehouse signs and therefore know where they were getting to work.
As soon as a man can read, he enters that most intoxicating of all worlds, the world of ideas. Eh? And just think, instead of dying at the looms of a cotton mill, you could be coming alive at the thoughts of the great philosophers like Emanuel Swedenborg. No, come back, listen to me.
I don't think they want to listen, Mr. Babelwick.
Please, listen to me. I speak as one of this country's greatest humanitarians. I'm a leading social improver.
I'm offering every worker who returns to my mill a free pair of Northampton boots.
Hey! How are you, Mr. Blunt?
Jack, don't you go as well?
Augustus, I don't understand.
No, sir. I know you don't.
Here you are, Jack, the last of the bone soup.
Thank you, Molly.
There's just a trickle left.
Look at the bone.
Oh, and I've got two.
Oh, well, at least it's hot.
That's all that can be said for it.
Oh, Squire. Squire, you're back.
Yes.
Until Jack. Jack, you've returned to us.
Yes, Squire. I took one look at that cotton mill and I decided to come back.
Oh, out of guilt?
No. I just didn't want to work.
Squire?
Yes.
Where?
Where's the bread?
I'm sorry?
The bread?
What? Squire?
What?
You were supposed to go to the village for bread, Squire.
Oh!
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, the bread.
What? Really, is it?
We're starving, Squire.
You had 5 shillings in your pocket. Well, I, how should I put this? I rode out to the village, as you know, but I have to say that my stomach was rattling to such a degree that I was forced to stop at Dribb's Alehouse.
Oh, no.
For a plate of bacon and eggs.
Oh.
And I just finished what was probably the most delicious plate of bacon and eggs of my life.
Oh.
And was just about to chew on a little French tart when, at the very moment that a drunken redcoat shot the innkeeper's parrot for impersonating the king, I saw her, a sad-faced old crone with twisted fingers and a squint, selling tickets for charity.
You mean you spent the money from my silver waistcoat on another lottery ticket?
Oh, just as I had to.
Oh!
It was in aid of the National Society for the Relief of Decayed Housekeepers. Sixpence going towards homes for disabled drummers.
Oh. Why,
And we stand to win 2,000 guineas. Just think what I could do with 2,000 guineas. I could turn Babblewick Hall into a hospital for demoralized mill workers.
Oh. I'm going to kill him.
I still have enough to pay your wages.
I'm going to kill
him. Oh, Justin!
You great metalhead, you great bladder brain.
Oh, stop his skull. Kill him off.
You great skitty-faced, skitty-eyed.
There's an idea of abusing him, and it was any case of the season.
Nothing, nothing, knock knee, nincompoop.
Babblewick Hall was written by Scott Cherry and starred Nicholas the Prevost, Forbes Masson, Dave Hill, Maggie McCarthy, Benedict Sandiford, Geoffrey McGiven, Elizabeth Spriggs, and Pat Coombs. The music was composed by Paul Mottram, and the producer was John Rolfe.